This is The Blueprint. Coming up, my trip to Washington, D.C. on behalf of the National Security Committee. Then we're going to hear about Free the Beer and what's going on to free your beer. And then we're going to hear about some of the procedural wrangles that are going on the Hill to make sure that your voice is heard by Parliament.
You're listening to The Blueprint, Canada's conservative podcast.
Well, they thought they were going to have an easy day over there today, but not so fast, Mr. Speaker.
What is it going to take for the Prime Minister to have any respect for any laws in this country that may curb his out-of-control behavior?
And now, here's your host, Tony Clement.
Welcome, one and all, to Volume 2 of Blueprint, the Conservative Party of Canada podcast, and I want to thank the Office of the Leader of the Opposition for the opportunity. My name is Tony Clement, Member of Parliament for Parry Sound Muskoka, and your host for The Blueprint. Well, first off, I want to talk about something that might be of interest to folks, because what does an MP do when he or she is not in the House of Commons and not in her or his constituency? I spent 2 days last week in Washington, D.C., with a House of Commons committee, the House of Commons Standing Committee on Public Safety and National Security. We visited Washington, D.C. as a committee, and it was part of the committee's study of Canada's national security framework. So I was there with a colleague, Diane Watts, from Surrey, B.C., a Conservative MP from Surrey, but also with Liberal MPs and with an NDP MP, all members of the committee. And we had a series of meetings, of course, to really gain insight on Canada-U.S. border security issues, anti-terrorism, the border control, transportation security, all of these issues that are part and parcel of our national security. I serve as the Conservative Party's National Security and Public Safety Critic, and as a member of the Public Safety and National Security Committee, it was my honor to be part of that session as well. So a number of meetings. We had, of course, congressional meetings. It was a kind of an interesting day to have congressional meetings on the Thursday, because it was the day that the House of Representatives in the U.S. was having the vote on Obamacare. So a little bit of distraction going on there in Congress, not dissimilar to sometimes when we have a big vote in the House of Commons, your mind is really focused on that vote. But we had a number of congressmen and women who did agree to meet with us, mostly from border districts that were either on the Washington State, BC border, or the New Hampshire border with Quebec, or in one case, New York, upstate New York fellow. So people like Congressman Daniel Kildee, a Democrat from Michigan, met with us. We also met with, as I say, congresspeople like Susan DelBene from Washington and her staff, and Anne McLean-Kuster, again, a New Hampshire congresswoman and her staff. So it was a great opportunity to talk about border issues, but also talk about Canada-U.S. trade. I mean, you're not just wearing your national security hat, you're also there advancing the argument that it is important for the U.S. to maintain and enhance trade links with Canada. You know, there's a big debate going on post-Trump about whether the United States should sign off and remove itself from NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, or what sort of changes the United States is going to pursue. So we wanted to get our 2 cents worth in about how important that border trade is for their own districts, that they have jobs that are important to them as congresspeople that they want to maintain and enhance, and those jobs are dependent upon Canada-U.S. trade. So that was really important. On the national security front, we talked about terrorism threats, cybersecurity, intelligence gathering, information sharing, oversight of national security activities and national security agencies. So these were all very important issues. Did I raise the issue of these illegal border crossers coming from U.S. to Canada? You bet I did. And of course, made the point to all who would listen that this is something that we're quite concerned about, and we're concerned about how many are crossing, and we want to work with the Americans to prevent illegal border crossing, because we have rules in place and we have people who are legitimately trying to advance their case that they are genuine refugees who should be welcome to Canada. But illegal border crossers who are fake refugees, obviously, that is not something that we're interested in promoting or seeing occurring at the levels that is going on. So that was obviously a topic. We got to visit the terrorism screening agency, which is the watch list, basically. There's about a million people around the world on this terrorism watch list, and how they go about within a legal constitutional framework to add people to the watch list. Of course, we have some concerns about names that appear on there that shouldn't be on there, and they are quite aware that the list is not perfect, but they're constantly working with Canada and with allies to improve that watch list. So that was very interesting. Hey, I also got to visit the NASA offices. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration has an office in Washington. Of course, Cape Canaveral and Houston are their main operational centers, but they do have a presence in Washington, D.C. as well. So we got to meet with some of the directors there and see what their plans are. Hey, good news for those who think that space travel is important. President Trump has signed off on continual funding for the mission to Mars, the manned mission to Mars. So that's very exciting and could be a reality. Certainly, I'm hopeful within my lifetime. And if you're a younger listener, definitely within your lifetime. And that's very exciting. And there'll be all sorts of breakthroughs, technological breakthroughs that will occur because we will, as a civilization, be pursuing this mission to Mars. So that was kind of cool. I got to see their operations center there, where they had a live feed from the International Space Station, as well as some of their other sites as well. And that was very cool to see too. And I got to do it on May the 4th, which was Star Wars Day. You know, May the 4th be with you, and so on. So that was kind of fun to do that, to do real space stuff on International Star Wars Day. A great trip. I want to thank the committee for having me as part of that. And of course, there'll be some follow-up that will occur as well as we continue our discussions at committee. For instance, the National Security Committee is reviewing Bill C-23 right now, which is the pre-clearance bill that will expand pre-clearance to the United States to make it easier for travelers to get their pre-clearance and to land at domestic airports in the United States, and vice versa, of course. So we will continue to hear witnesses on that particular topic, but certainly having those discussions in Washington, D.C. was very, very helpful to all of the committee members who attended. So that's my report from Washington, D.C. I hope that was useful to you as it was for me.
You're listening to The Blueprint, Canada's conservative podcast. Browse all of our episodes at podcast.conservative.ca. And now, back to The Blueprint and your host, Tony Clement.
Welcome to Blueprint, the Conservative Party of Canada's official podcast. I'm your host, Tony Clement, Member of Parliament for Parry Sound Muskoka. And I have with me as a guest, Mr. John Barlow, Member of Parliament for the Foothills in Alberta. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be on the program.
Well, it's an honor to have you as well. This is volume two of our podcast, so you're one of our first guests, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that is a big honor.
It is a big honor, and I think that we're going to have a good conversation because we're going to talk about Free the Beer. And for our listeners, this is an important issue because, of course, beer is not only important to the leisure aspect of our lives, but is also important to the Canadian economy. So, John, why don't you just set the table a little bit? Why is Free the Beer so important for the future of the Canadian economy, and why is this such a big issue?
Well, we knew that the Canada Free Trade Agreement was going to be coming out this year, and it was something that we had started on when we were a government. Our colleague James Moore was instrumental in putting that together. But we knew that alcohol would not be part of that Canadian Free Trade Agreement. And we're seeing across Canada, we're Canadian. We love beer, and we should be proud of these amazing craft beers that we have in Canada. And it is a growing industry. But unfortunately, the ability for these businesses to be able to grow and expand is literally limited by provincial boundaries. It is very difficult for a craft brewer, a distiller, a winemaker to be able to sell their products outside of their province without getting permission from a provincial liquor board, which means a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of costs, and a lot of provinces will just simply say no.
I just want to come back to that one point, how important the craft brewing industry is, because mm-hmm. I know in my constituency, I now have five craft breweries operating, and they hire people. They are good year-round full-time jobs, and that's replicated throughout the whole country. There are literally hundreds of craft brewers now. Is that right?
Yeah, this, you know, in Alberta, my home province, we were probably one of the provinces that was far behind in terms of this industry, but we have more than 50 in Alberta. I have five under construction in my constituency alone, one up and operating. But as you touched on, Tony, what makes the craft brewing industry so attractive is the fact that most of them are built in rural communities. So
right.
They are bringing new economic development opportunities to rural communities where opportunities have been limited or been on the decline. So not only are they bringing new jobs and new opportunities to these rural communities, but they're becoming tourist attractions, brewery
Absolutely.
Tours. Yeah. Plus for the guys around them that are growing rye and barley and those kinds of things, this is something they really get excited about and buy into.
That's a really good point. One of the breweries in my riding is in an old car plant
right.
that was part manufacturing parts for automobiles, now repurposed to be a brewery. Another one is in an old Canadian Tire store, repurposed for, you know, going from retail to manufacturing. So beer is manufactured now, and it's part of our manufacturing prowess, so we should be proud of that. So tell me a little bit about what the campaign is about. We know that beer cannot pass very easily cross-border between province to province. So what is the Conservative Party's Free the Beer campaign about?
Well, really, the main thing right now is raising awareness. We want Canadians to understand that this is an issue. We've been traveling across Canada since November. We've done beer festivals in Ottawa, Toronto, Calgary, Halifax. And when you talk to Canadians about this, not just the brewers and distillers themselves, but also Canadians who are obviously beer enthusiasts, we like our beer, and they are surprisingly, they know this issue, and they are very frustrated by the fact that we are... As provincial and federal governments, we are blocking the ability for these businesses to grow, but also it impacts consumer choice. For myself, being from Alberta, I can't bring some of my great Alberta craft beer here to Ontario. That's technically illegal. Right now we have the Como case going on with New Brunswick and Quebec.
Tell me about that case a little bit.
So a couple of years ago, Bernard Como, a gentleman from New Brunswick, crossed the border to Quebec, bought a bunch of beer because it's significantly cheaper, crossed the border back into New Brunswick and was arrested and charged for transporting liquor across provincial boundaries. He challenged that charge and won his case. The province of New Brunswick refused to go to appeal, instead said, according to the Constitution, free trade is a constitutional right, and we want to go to the Supreme Court. So very good news. Last Friday, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear that case. So this is a huge step forward and a great opportunity that we could see free trade in Canada.
So we could get it by virtue of a Supreme Court judgment. What you and other conservatives are pushing for is that this become a political issue, that politicians do the right thing and remove the trade barriers that are preventing beer and other products as well
right.
from going cross border. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, Section 121 of the Constitution is extremely clear. Any product made or produced in one province should be or shall be traded freely to the other provinces. Our founding fathers understood that free trade was a foundational pillar of Confederation. They knew that free trade was extremely important into the growth of the Dominion. But over the decades, provinces have put up barriers, and the federal government has allowed them to do it. So we are asking the Liberal government to step up, start fighting for Canada's economy, act as an intervener in the Supreme Court case, and try and influence that decision. It is black and white in our Constitution.
It's very bizarre that it's in many cases easier to trade with the United States of America than it is to trade cross-border in Canada itself.
Absolutely. I have a meadery in my constituency, so Honey Wine or Honey Beer. They have just signed a contract to export their product to Japan because they couldn't get an agreement to sell it into BC,
wow.
You know, which is literally an hour away. So now he's having to go across the Pacific Ocean. Many of our craft brewers have much easier opportunity to sell into Texas than Toronto. A much higher cost, but it's a much easier process to go through. And I would say we're probably one of the only Western countries in the world that has these kind of interprovincial barriers.
Yeah. So. No. Well, that's wonderful that our caucus, you and others. I know Dan Albus, BC MP, has been outspoken about this issue as well. Many of our MPs have. So it's good to have our MPs on the sides of this. Is really a consumer issue as well. It's not just a political issue. This is for choice for consumers and pricing that is better for consumers. Is that right?
Yeah, this is about consumer choice. I shouldn't have a provincial liquor board telling me as a Canadian what I can and cannot have. But also it's about small business. These are small businesses who hire Canadians, use Canadian products, are Canadian entrepreneurs, and we should be standing up for them and championing their abilities to be able to grow and succeed.
I'm speaking with John Barlow, our Alberta MP from the Foothills. Thank you for being on the program. John, what if our listeners hear this podcast and they want to do something to get involved in this campaign, where should they go? What should they do?
Well, we have a website, freethebeer.net. There's a petition online. We're asking, that petition is asking the federal government to act as an intervener in the Supreme Court case, but also asking them to include alcohol in the Canadian Free Trade Agreement. So there's two ways that they can get involved. We have our petition, but also go to our website and freethebeer.net, and there's a way you can sign online as well.
So freethebeer.net. They can always go to conservative.ca, which is the Conservative Party of Canada website.
You bet.
There are, as well, these beer festivals coming up. I know I've got a couple of beer festivals in my own constituency. You were mentioning that you've got some as well. There'll be pop-ups there as well, local MPs, conservative MPs, taking this issue to where beer is being consumed.
It's a horrible job.
Responsibly,
sometimes.
I'm sure. a little bit of music, live music as well. Beer fests are great.
Yeah.
So there'll be perhaps an opportunity there, but freethebeer.net is the central site for this. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And actually, as you know, it's kind of a fun part of this too, as Canada's 150th anniversary, we have on our website, you can vote for your favorite craft beer, and we're going to name Canada's 50 favorite craft beer as part of Canada's 150.
Well, that's a great thing to do, and
why not?
I would encourage anyone to take a look at the Muskoka or Perry Sound craft beers as part of their voting, but certainly it's great that we're doing this, and really think that this is being on the side of the consumer, being on the side of our Constitution,
absolutely,
helping our small businesses. This is a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. I'm glad you, John, and others are a part of this movement as well.
It's a real pleasure, and the feedback we've had from Canadians is overwhelming. They want to see this resolved, and it's very frustrating for consumers and business owners.
Absolutely. Well, you've heard it here. Free the Beer is live, freethebeer.net or conservative.ca. You can visit either of those sites and get part of this important movement for beer, for our communities, rural communities in particular,
exactly.
But really all communities, as well as small businesses and the consumers. So, John Bartle, thank you for being part of our program. Free the beer, everybody.
Thanks, Tony.
You're listening to The Blueprint, Canada's conservative podcast. Browse all of our episodes at podcast.conservative.ca. And now, back to The Blueprint and your host, Tony Clement.
You're listening to Blueprint, Canada's official opposition, the Conservative Party of Canada's official podcast. I'm your host, Tony Clement, Member of Parliament for Perry Sound Muskoka. And I have a very special guest with me today, Candace Bergen, MP for Portage-Lisgar.
Correct, Portage-Lisgar.
I'm glad I got that right. And as importantly, perhaps, she is the official opposition House Leader, which means that she leads our caucus when it comes to issues before Parliament.
Correct.
Okay, I've got that right. So that's two out of two so far for me. We wanted to talk a little bit about an issue that is before the House of Commons right now, which is changes to the standing orders. So, Candace, why don't you walk through what the standing orders are, first of all,
sure,
and maybe what the Liberals have been proposing and why it's important for Canadians to be concerned about this.
Sure. But first of all, thanks for having me on the show,
for
Tony.
Sure.
Blueprint. That's great. I'm very excited to be on with you. So the standing orders are the rules around how Parliament works in the House of Commons. So they are rules around how long people, members can speak, rules around what the government can do to pass legislation. There are rules right now that they can shut down debate, and we don't always like it, but it is a tool that they have. We have tools that we can use, not only in the House of Commons, but at committee to hold the government to account. There are rules around question period and how question period operates. So all of the standing orders, and there's actually like a book, like two phone book thick, a book of standing orders that govern us. So a lot of standing orders.
So if this was a hockey game, these are the rules that dictate when a pass is offside or how icing occurs or when you get a penalty, those kinds of things.
Exactly. That's a very good way to describe it, especially right now with the playoffs that are going
that's
on.
Right. Yeah.
It's the rules on how we play and how we operate in the House of Commons.
So the Liberals have proposed some changes to these standing orders. Why don't you go through what those changes are?
Sure. First of all, though, I will say it's not uncommon for different governments to propose changes. There have been changes to the standing orders over the last 150 years. Definitely there have been changes. But over 80% of those changes, many of them minor, have not happened without consensus of all the parties. And that's what this is really about. So certainly the government has the right to talk about changes, but precedent would say that before they can make those changes, they need to have consensus of the other parties. And the reason is simple. In order for those changes to not just be in the best interests of one side or the other, each side then would have to sell why that change is a good idea. So if, for example, the government can persuade the opposition why their change is a good idea, it would be because they've shown us that it's not just in their best interests. And they also would have shown us that it will be good for future governments as well and future opposition. And likewise, if there's a change that we would want as opposition, it would be incumbent on us to persuade the government why it's good for all of us.
That's an important check and balance, isn't it? Because no government is in government forever. So whatever change they apply to themselves and to the opposition could be used by another government in the same manner.
Exactly. And that's really where our back is up with the Liberals, because they want to make these changes arbitrarily. They don't want a consensus. They say they want a conversation, but they've forgotten that a conversation is two ways, and they've just said that they're going to ram through these changes. Now, we think we now finally understand kind of what their motive is behind forcing these changes through. And it all comes down to, Tony, them not wanting to be accountable, and specifically Justin Trudeau not wanting to be here in Parliament. He has very little respect for this place. I think he views it as an annoyance. And you know, when he's in question period and getting tough questions, he's not in what he, you know, probably views as his safe, happy place.
Right.
He doesn't want to be here answering questions.
Not much opportunity to take selfies.
No selfie opportunities. Yeah. Nobody's worshiping at his feet. You know, the men and women on the opposition side aren't looking to have any photos or anything.
And
with
our
him,
job,
right?
is to ask tough but fair questions of the government to keep them accountable. That's part of our job, is it not?
And listen, he's done a lot of things over the last year and a half that need answers to. I mean, whether it's the massive deficit, no plan to balance the budget, some of his big ethical lapses in judgment. I mean, we're seeing his own ministers who are misleading Canadians. So there's a lot of areas where we have to do our job here in the House of Commons. But it's clear one of the biggest changes that they want to make is that Justin Trudeau would only have to be here 1 hour, 1 day a week to answer questions. And that's something that I think has really got us frustrated, again, the way they're doing it. But that rule in and of itself, we think, is an important one whereby we need to keep the Prime Minister accountable every day that the House is sitting. There are issues that come up, and we recognize there's some days he might be traveling and doing things, but he can't just be here 1 day a week. Can you imagine saying to your boss, you know, or any Canadian saying to their boss, you know what, I think I don't want to be here on Fridays and Mondays. I just want to be here 1 day a week to do some of the tough work.
Right, and to answer any questions about how well I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's the other side of this too. These are questions to make sure that he and his team are accountable to Canadians.
Yeah, exactly, which they don't want to be.
And so his idea is 1 day a week in question period. The other 4 days of the week that the House is sitting, he would not be available for question period. Is that right?
Exactly. He no matter what was happening, he would be able to then have license to say, hey, the standing orders only say I need to be here 1 day a week. And, I mean, again, back to the whole idea of changing these rules without getting a consensus, he is now saying that every prime minister from now until whenever,
right,
for eternity, would only have to be here 1 day a week. and then could go ahead and make other changes to the standing orders for their benefit.
Unilaterally, basically.
Back to your example, it would be like as if the Stanley Cup winner said, well, we won the tournament, we won the cup, so we're now going to go change the rules on how the game is played. Right. Trudeau doesn't have a right to do that. Yes, he won a majority. Yes, he's changing legislation, and he's using the tools available to him to change legislation. We're opposing it. But he doesn't have a right to change the standing orders and make his life easier without getting consensus from all of us.
And this is an important point. It's not only our position, but to be fair, the NDP feel the same way about this. So this is not a partisan conservative position. This is all the parties in the opposition that are official parties saying, hey, wait a minute, let's have a discussion. And I want to make it clear. We're speaking, by the way, with Candace Bergen, who is the House leader for the Conservative Party of Canada. Candace, you have been, in my observation, I'm going to be editorializing a little bit, you've been very reasonable in your approach with the House leader for the Liberal government saying, hey, let's talk about this, but really have not had a good conversation because they don't want to have a real conversation with you.
You're right, Tony, in that this is not just the Conservatives that are opposing these changes or the way they're doing it. The NDP are fully on side with us. We've been very strong in our unity on this, as well as the Bloc and the Green also have issues. But what we've done, we wanted to be reasonable because we actually would like to get this solved. It really is disruptive. We don't have a lot of tools available, and so we'd like to see this solved. One of the things that we offered the opposition House leader, and I guess she went to Justin Trudeau, and he said no. But one of the options that we gave them was something that, I mean, I hate to use Jean Chrétien as an example, but Jean Chrétien put together a working group of about four or five parliamentarians, and it took them 2 years. And then they came out with suggestions for changes to the standing order. Mm. It was workable. There wasn't a bunch of havoc in the House or in the chamber. There was peace.
Everybody worked together.
Yeah. So we've written her a letter, two letters actually, saying, would you even consider this model? It was one of your prime ministers, so why wouldn't you accept it? And we heard nothing back from her until a week ago when she said, no, we're just going to introduce a motion on the floor of the House of Commons and we're going to ram these through. So they've been very unreasonable to work with.
So where does it go from here, Candace? What do we expect to have happen, and will there be a debate about this?
They've told us that they will put a motion on the House floor. We haven't seen it yet, so if and when that happens, we're going to use every tool available to stop them from doing this, and it won't be good for them. And overall, it's just not good for the respect and for the work that we're trying to do here in the House of Commons. So, but they really have left us very few options. They really are being bullies on this. I don't like using that term, but they are. You know,
We've kept the door open to say, look, if you change your mind, we want to talk to you. Is that right?
We do, and we're willing to compromise and find a workable solution. But again, We know this Prime Minister. He there's a level of arrogance that is just getting out of control, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
We're seeing this where the House of Commons and you know you minions here in Parliament don't really matter, and how dare you challenge me, Justin Trudeau? So I don't want to be here, and I will push through what I want to because you know I'm large and I'm in charge.
It should be noted that this is the second time they tried to push these through in the short term of the Trudeau government so far. The last time it was kind of derailed by Justin Trudeau's elbow on the floor of the House of Commons when the errant elbow hit an opposition MP. And then they kind of retreated from that. But it's really the same kind of way that they're trying to do things. Here's our plan. We're going to vote on it. We're not going to have any consensus. We're just going to ram it through.
That's right. They have tried this before a year and a half ago. It didn't go well for them, but maybe they've thought that there's enough time has passed. And again, why it didn't go well for them the last time is because Trudeau lost his temper and came charging across the House of Commons floor. Unbelievable to watch. You were there, Tony.
I was there. Yeah,
I was there. It was unbelievable to watch. But I don't think that was just all of a sudden out of character for him. Mm. I think he has been accustomed to, especially the last year and a half, getting his way and doing whatever he wants, and it's this arrogance. And listen, this isn't just about us in the House of Commons. I mean, we have a job to do, we recognize there's going to be challenges, But it's arrogance and disrespect to the Canadian people, to people in Canada who are working hard, who play by the rules, who have a lot of questions for what the government, in regards to what the government is doing. It's disrespectful to them.
And this is the wider issue, isn't it? Yeah. It's not just about us as MPs and the rules that we are playing by, but it really is a greater indicator about how people throughout Canada are being disrespected and ignored.
Exactly. And we're seeing this on so many levels from the Liberals, whether it's misuse of taxpayers' dollars. I mean, we just heard how they've spent $30,000, mm-hmm. Which, you know what, that's for some people, some people make that. In where I live, people make $30,000 a year. There are people, right. So that's a living for many people. The Liberals use $30,000 to take some very wealthy executives to a play in New York, mm-hmm. You know, because they just think that they're entitled to use taxpayers' dollars the way that they want to. I mean, we've seen offices being renovated for $1 million costs. We're seeing, obviously, the Prime Minister flying all around the world for all of his vanity tours.
Right.
And people are struggling. People are struggling to save for their kids' education, to pay for their kids' hockey because they can't use it as a deduction anymore. Parents have seen income splitting being taken away. These are real challenges that Canadians are facing, and we have a Prime Minister who is completely oblivious to it and is just thinking about what's in his best interests.
And I think that's the wider issue for our listeners, too, because this is kind of part and parcel of how the Trudeau government is dealing with issues. It's not just about the standing orders of the House of Commons. It's about respect for Canadians and really living up to the promises that Justin Trudeau made on the election campaign, that he was going to be different, he was going to be more open, he was going to be more transparent, he was going to be more respectful. And all of that, basically, we're seeing on issue after issue after issue, is going out the window.
On issue after issue, you're right, Tony. What we are seeing is a person who campaigned saying one thing, and he's doing completely the opposite. It's like when you scratch away at the surface of Justin Trudeau, what you see is not what you get.
Well, I'm gonna leave it at that. Candace Bergen, thank you for being on Blueprint, the official opposition, the Conservative Party of Canada's official podcast, talking about standing orders, but the wider issues of why the opposition, the Conservative Party, we are standing up for Canadians and the Liberal government is not. But thank you for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Blueprint, Canada's conservative podcast. To find more episodes, interviews, and in-depth discussions of politics in Canada, search for The Blueprint on iTunes or visit podcast.conservative.ca.